This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This is On Driven on Joy 94.9, the multicultural show with Mark and Hugh. On Driven represents peace and understanding in our multicultural LGBTIQ community. If you have any comments on the program or would like to ask any questions, you can contact us in the following ways. On Driven on Joy 949 is our Facebook, SMS 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au.
In today's show, we're talking to Kwong and Greg, who are partners and also artists. Kwong is from Malaysia and Greg is from country Victoria. We will be talking to them about how they were forced to meet, their art, and also their midsummer exhibition.
Joy 94.9, this is On Driven with Mark and Hugh, and that was a very dramatic song that we had.
Wasn't it? Nice way to kick off the show.
It was. And our two guests this week are Kwong and Greg. Now, who would like to tell us about the song?
I'll go first.
Go on, Kwong.
Hi, I'm Kwong. Hi, everybody. I was born in Malaysia, Kota Bharu, which is in the east coast of Malaysia. Mm-hmm. Came here in 1986 and pretty much stayed here all that time, apart from a year that I spent away in England studying. Okay. So you're stuck with me now.
Kwong, do you want to tell us what the song was?
Oh, that's actually one of Greg's choices.
Okay. Yeah, I can tell you about that. That song's my fault. Yeah, Linda Edder, who is singing Man of La Mancha from Don Quixote, and I chose that basically because a lot of my history's all been in songs and show tunes, and you know, I was a piano bar entertainer for many, many years.
Really?
And, playing lots and lots of that sort of music, I suppose. Yeah. So that's why I decided on that. And also it was one that our lesbian friends just seem to absolutely adore. So
your lesbian friends.
Our lesbian friends go mad for that lady.
I can just imagine a drag queen belting that out.
Absolutely,
on stage as well. Yeah.
I love all that stuff, all that orchestration, like heavy orchestration or anything musical like that's great. Yeah.
Okay. So, Kwong, you were talking about Malaysia, where you're from.
Mm-hmm.
Whereabout in Malaysia?
In Kota Bharu, which is in Kelantan State, in the east coast. Not many people would go to the east coast these days.
Why not?
Well, it's I shouldn't say that. it's probably not the most popular destination. It's quite there's a lot of Muslim there, and not that that's a problem, but I'm not sure.
So when most people think of Malaysia, they think of KL. So how far away from KL is it, for example?
Oh, completely the other side. KL is on the west coast, mm-hmm. Penang and Ipoh, which is where I grew up mostly. I was born in the east coast, but then we moved when I was 2 years old back to the west coast.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned that there's a high population of Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
Is Muslim the country's religion?
Or? Yes, national religion.
So what percentage Muslim, Christian, or what other religions do they have?
Probably 50-60% you know, Malays, and they're all Muslims.
Oh, okay.
There might be a few, you know, Chinese or Indian, you know, of Indian ethnicity who became, you know, Islamic Muslims by choice. Yeah.
Are you Muslim yourself?
No, I'm a Buddhist.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So what proportion of people in your country would be Buddhist?
Oh, actually, I haven't... I don't quite know.
We're
that.
Testing you on all this.
Testing me. Well, then again, you know, you have Richard Gere and people like that being Buddhist. So these days it's quite hard to say. But definitely less than, you know, less than 40-50%.
Right.
Because the Malays wouldn't be Buddhist. So it would only be the Chinese or perhaps the Indians and, you know, some other.
It's a nice religion, Buddhism, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's a kind of nice. Like a...
I like it.
Make your own version type religion.
Well, you have your little altar at home, don't you? And you give thanksgiving to your gods there and light candles and...
I do a little bit because of my mum's influence.
Right.
I have a little altar, but there's a bit of incense bowl there, but I try not to do it too often because it kind of make the wall go a bit yellow.
I knew someone whose parents put cigarettes and cognac.
Yes, really? I remember doing that as a kid. Yes. That's to the ancestors, part of the Taoism.
They said one night we drank the cognac.
Yeah, we used to have chicken and, you know, fruits and all sorts of things.
Yeah.
So you were saying that where you grew up was in Kota Baru, which is predominantly Muslim. So how come you ended up living in that area?
Well, my parents were public servants, and as such, they had to move about every 3 years. So they had no choice.
All right.
And so... So I think when I was born, we just happened to be there. My father happened to work there. And soon after, he got a transfer. So we all moved back to the West Coast.
Mm. So when did you come to Australia?
1986, the 3rd of February.
Oh. Wow, that's very specific.
It was a very memorable day.
What can you tell us what time?
It was very early in the morning.
So why did you come to Australia?
I came here to study. My brother was already here. It was the country of choice because my brother was studying here. And yeah, you're right. I could have gone to UK or the US, but Australia geographically is a little bit closer to Malaysia. And you know, being parents' pet, so to speak, you know, they wouldn't want me to be too far
parents'
away.
Parents' pet.
Yeah. I was going to say mummy's boy, but then I thought, well, what about my dad? He might feel left out.
So what made you your parents' pet?
Oh, well, you know, I like to think that I'm the favorite.
And his brother's not listening.
No. So you've only got one brother.
I've got one other brother, yeah.
And he's not the pet.
He's not. I wouldn't think so.
So let's talk to Greg.
Hi.
You're sitting there very quiet, Greg.
That's all right, yeah. Get a word in eventually.
Tell us a little bit about your background.
My background, I was born in Wangaratta, northeast Victoria. I was there for a few years, moved to Swan Hill and back to Wangaratta, and couldn't wait to get out of the place.
So you're a country boy.
Country boy, yeah. So I like the country. I just don't like the people that live in it, basically. So I was very glad to get down to Melbourne to go to university. And I guess my biggest fear was thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to get down there and have to start telling people that I'm gay. And the course I was doing, there was something wrong with you if you weren't. So it was quite an eye-opening experience.
What was the course you were doing?
I was doing music and drama at Melbourne State Teachers College.
Okay.
And you needed to tell people?
No.
What did your parents think about you moving away?
I think they were quite happy for me to move because it was just a necessity for education at that sort of stage. So I actually moved myself down with all my gear, including a piano, in the back of a horse trailer. And
How old were you when you moved?
Just turned 18, yeah. So I just finished VCE, it was in those days, back up in Wangaratta, and came down to Melbourne, lived with some very hoony guys in a house in West Brunswick for a year.
Hoony guys?
Very hoony guys, local guys from up in the country that I'd known from beforehand. So
how did you fit in with sort of the Hoonie guys.
Well, I didn't really fit in with those. Fortunately, I had a little bungalow out the backyard of the house, and so I ran my own life.
Flat.
Yeah, granny flat. Yeah, I was in a granny flat already.
Okay. Well, we'll come back to Greg and Kwong's story very soon.
Joy 94.9, and you're listening to Mark and Hugh, and today we're talking to Kwong and Greg. So, Kwong, just tell us about that track.
That track, it's called Flying Towards the Edge of the World Alone.
Wow.
It's by a couple of Taiwanese women, Wang Xinglian and Zheng Huajun. And may I dedicate this song to my best friend who lives in Dallas, Texas. And hi, Sean. Sean should be listening. It should be around midnight.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, Sean, if you're listening in, send us an email in at onair@joy.org.au and give us some juicy gossip.
And I chose that track because of something that he wrote soon after he left Malaysia. Mm-hmm. And by then, I had already left Malaysia as well. And he wrote something that reflected his displacement that he felt in Ireland. He went to Ireland, and it was him going on a night flight. And when the plane stopped at Saudi Arabia to refuel, he woke up and saw the woman next door, next to him, putting on more perfume, and it's called Midnight Flight or something.
Oh yeah.
And anyway, so it was just quite a lonely adventure, and I felt a bit like that when I came here.
All right. And it's a beautiful song as well, isn't it? Very, very lyrical song.
Yeah, yeah. Considering that it was done in 1987.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Now, this isn't the first time both of you have been on Orange Ribbon, has it?
No.
Or Joy, anyway.
Joy. Yes, yes.
Let's see. Kwong, you were on Orange Ribbon a long time ago.
Yes, yes. I was here in the pretty much near its inception with Kim.
Right.
Must have been 1997 because it was just before we met, and I remember I was single. So.
Or you told them they were.
Could it be 1997? Because my memory could fail me.
Well, On Driven actually started around about July 98.
Oh, okay.
So maybe you're just 1 year out, maybe. That's
okay.
All.
Yeah,
but, but not 100% certain. Yeah, sure. But
that's
we do know the year.
Going,
we do know the year.
For so long. And speaking of that, we've got a bit of a special event coming up at the end of the month.
We do. On the 28th of this month, we will be celebrating 500 shows.
Wow. Mm. Congratulations. That's milestone. Congratulations.
So we're looking forward to that. We're going to have a two-hour show that day.
We are going to be having a two-hour show, a bit of a retrospective, and listening to some of the clips from previous years. And obviously, it hasn't been Hugh and myself in just that time. There's been lots of people involved and lots of people in the team. So
I don't know how many. Up until the 400th show, we're at 11 presenters.
Yeah.
So it must be around about 15 now.
Yeah. So that's 1 a year. That's not too bad.
Yeah. And I just discovered today that I've actually been on the show just over 4 years.
Really?
Wow. Oh.
Yeah. So there's a lot to talk about on the 28th.
Did it ever come back, the former host?
Or don't let him in the
We had one.
There's been lots back and forth, on and off.
Yeah, we had one host who did come back for a little while. Mm-hmm. He came back and joined us, but unfortunately had to depart again. As you know,
Work commitments tend to drag people away.
They do. They do. But
takes a bit of time.
Hopefully we sort of stay around for a little bit longer.
Well, just before we get on with the interview, we've had a couple of messages in, so I'd just like to read those out. So we've had a message from Caroline and Trish, and says, "Hi, Kwong and Greg. Looking forward to hearing your stories and to your exhibition."
Hi, Caroline. Hi, Trish.
So they're listening in live on air. And we've also received one from someone who's anonymous. They've just sent in a message saying about 15 to 20% are Buddhists and 1 to 2% are Christians in presumably Malaysia, that is.
Yeah.
So there we are.
Somebody's Googled it for us.
Thanks for doing the homework for us.
Yeah, but you should have given us your name so we can say hello to you.
Yeah, indeed. So message back in. And if anyone else wants to send a message in, what's the SMS and email details?
Okay, SMS 0427JOY949. You can actually call us. Jess and Heath are on reception. 1300 Joy 949, or send us an email if you're sitting at your computer on air at joy.org.au.
Exactly.
There you go.
Yeah.
Now,
so back to the stories. Hey,
back to the story. Mm-hmm. Now, Kwong, what was it you spoke about then? Was it your life on you were talking about in Non-Driven?
Oh, I came on with a good friend, Richard, and we were here. I think the theme was two, you know, gay Asian men, you know, living in Melbourne. What was it like? Yeah, that sort of thing.
Because then, I suppose in 98, if it was 98, there wasn't as many Asians in Melbourne then.
No. Yeah, I think so. Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, nowadays we've got all the students and everything else, but then...
We were special then. You were special. Now we're everywhere. Competition's keen.
Oh, you're still special, Kwong.
Oh, thank you.
And what about you, Greg? Now, you were on Joy.
Yeah, right back from the very beginning. I can remember when guys used to actually bring their own little mixing desks in from home to put in, you know, so that they could actually do the show. And then,
okay.
And then if there was a hissy fit thrown in any direction, that would be packed up very quickly and taken away again.
But, so was that when Joy was part-time?
Yes, it was only on a few hours over the weekends, yeah.
So what did you actually do?
Well, I'd written written and produced a radio play called Vigilantes in Panties, which went to air. It was 10-minute episodes and 10 episodes. So, and a couple of guys picked that up and put it on their shows every week. So that was great fun. I dragged all my friends in to act out the parts. We'd have a big booze up in a barbie at my place and record an episode sort of once a week. Okay. It was great fun, yeah.
So this was in the South Melbourne studios?
Yes, way back in the start.
The luxury South Melbourne.
Yes, yeah.
You know, if you got three people in the studio, you were in a sauna.
Absolutely, yes. There's other stories there, I presume.
Yeah.
So for the radio play, did you just do that as a one-off, or did you not
I'd written actually a second series, but it didn't go to air for some sort of political argy-bargy that was going on at Joy FM at the time. There were quite a few loud voices going around, people trying to sort out who was going to do what. So it sort of got to a point where it wasn't worth continuing. But all the scripts are up in the roof of a house in Henry Street, Windsor, somewhere, I think, at the moment. So
all right.
Somebody might find them one day.
Of course, in those days, Joy was finding its feet and getting established. And everyone, as now, was a volunteer. So,
absolutely.
You know, to keep a radio station going with volunteers, and especially at the very beginning, must have been a very hard job.
Quite volatile too, I think. Yeah, you know, a lot of egos and people all trying their best and trying to do everything they could. So
how long were you actually involved with Joy?
Well, I only really ended up doing that, which was a little bit like we were working outside of Joy and then just bringing those things into the people's... I went to a few annual general meetings and things, but I didn't end up being too much involved, because I actually then went off and I was conducting the Melbourne Gay and Lesbian Choir, which was called All Sounds at that stage.
Okay.
So I was fairly busy with that, and it was a sort of time when nearly every second person we knew was dropping dead from AIDS, unfortunately. So it was a pretty volatile time, and people were fairly... This was, you know, 20 years ago, so it was... I think we were all sort of nuts, really, when you look back on it.
Well, sounds like some good experiences.
Yes, some pretty amazing people, some great people.
Well, we'll come back to Greg and Kwong's story very soon. Joy 94.9, this is On Driven with Mark and Hugh. And we have two guests today. One is Kwong and one is Greg, who are actually a couple as well. Now, who picked the last song?
I picked this one as well. And by the way, you know, we did split the number of songs, just that Greg's choice had a bit of technical problem.
We did, yeah.
So I did pick this one. This is from...
Why have you got a smile over your face, Kwong?
I have so many songs to share. So.
We normally always listen to his music, but I love it, because even though I can't understand the lyrics, you know, they're just such beautiful melodies.
One was, again, another beautiful lyrical song, wasn't it?
Is brand new, only came out end of last year, by a veteran mainland Chinese singer, Na Ying, and produced by a Singaporean talented singer-songwriter, Tanya Chua.
Okay.
And so it's a very, very new sound for Na Ying. So it's made it to my personal best or most listened to albums of 2011. Yeah.
Well, you sound like a bit of a music buff, all this music you're listening to, and you're really keen to play music. When I was talking to you beforehand, you were excited about being able to play some stuff.
You know, I have agonized over the choice of our songs today for days. You know, there were so many that I wanted to play.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough when you say, right, we can only fit four or five songs in. It's like, oh, no.
That's it. We limit you.
So
now, before we go on, we've got a message here. Greg and I were at Melbourne State College studying music, and we taught a lovely high school in Mordialloc together.
Oh, good, Graham.
He conducted All Sounds, the predecessor of the Gay and Lesbian Chorus, and I was the president of the Rainbow Band, and that's from Julie Leder.
Leder, yes. Julie, very good friend of mine at the time. We taught together. We shouldn't. Did we mention the school? Did she mention the school? Maybe we shouldn't.
Just a lovely
high school in Mordialloc.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, great to hear from you, Julie. Yeah,
well, that's very nice, well. Julie. Thank you.
Come to our exhibition. Can I say that? Probably not. Sorry.
Okay.
And then we've got another one from S&T. But yes.
Oh, yes.
So thanks for them.
Now, let's talk to you, Kwong, about coming out.
Wow. And the year was 1991, I think. I was here. Final year of my law school. I met someone, and we won't go there as to how we met. I came out about a month after that.
Now, I heard, though, you actually lived with a woman for 5 years.
Yes, that's true, too. I had a girlfriend.
I know you're trying to skip that bit.
No. I'm quite happy to share. I had a girlfriend in law school. So we were together for 5 years. And I guess coming out to myself was the big step. Coming out to the world was the easy part. So it took me a long, long time to stop fooling myself.
So when you moved from Malaysia to Melbourne, were you aware at that point?
No, I think I did such a good job in, you know, shutting my mind, to that part of me. And I was just burying myself in books and, you know, academic pursuits. It never quite came up.
Okay. What about you, Greg?
Well, I grew up in Wangaratta, as I said, country Victoria, back in the 60s and 70s, so it was a pretty rough place to be. I think I always knew that I certainly didn't have any interest in girls, but it was certainly something that you kept to yourself. Like, you knew that it was never something
in country Victoria,
never say anything. And like I said, when I came to Melbourne and found out that the course I was doing, there was something wrong with you if you weren't gay. It was quite a fantastic experience, really.
So was part of coming to Melbourne to get away from sort of that
well,
culture?
Well, it was to study, and for me it was just, I was so thankful that I'd actually passed my BCE and could come. I was actually had myself enrolled for the police force if I didn't get into uni, and it was I can't imagine what that would have been like.
You know, police force. Tell.
Yes. Yeah.
So how did you eventually come out? Because you were quite late in coming out.
Oh, well, no, I was mentioning to Mark the other day that I didn't actually come out to my parents until I was about 30, but in terms of everything else I was doing in my life, because they still lived in the country, it was sort of like a matter of, the people that I still knew up there didn't know what my life was, but everybody else did, and I only really came out to them at a point where, at 30 years of age, I suppose I was. It looked like I was going to be in a relationship with somebody, and it was just a point of thinking, well, this person's going to be in my life. In fairness to them, if I'm going to have anything to do with my parents, they need to be aware that this person is part of my life. So that was probably the first time that I really had to deal with it, in terms of that
big. I suppose if you were in the city and they're in the country, you were separated enough
absolutely,
to have a separate life. But
yeah, definitely.
It's like having two lives, isn't it?
Well, to a point, except like I only went up to the country maybe three times a year for a weekend, you know, so it wasn't exactly like a big problem, you know, in terms of having to live a double lifestyle.
And did you get the pressure from where's your girlfriends and all that sort of thing?
No, I think everybody was pretty aware of what was going on when I look back at it. Yeah, there was never any. There were some questions probably from maybe my parents' friends, you know, about that sort of thing, but they seemed to give up on asking those questions after a while as well.
So. How did your parents take it?
Very, very well, yeah. I actually wrote to them, and that might sound like a really feeble thing to do, but I was advised at the time it's a great idea because it actually gives them time to think about process it and deal with it and process it in a, you know, in their own manner. Mm. And I just got a really nice phone call from my dad and saying, look, we're just worried about the age thing, you know, as everybody was, I suppose, at the time.
At the time, yeah.
And I just sort of said, look, you don't have to worry about that, you know, we're aware of it and what to do. So, yeah, everything was just fantastic from that sort of point on, which was quite a surprise and really just very, very nice, yeah.
What about you, Kwan?
To my parents? That wasn't hard. I actually ambushed them a little bit. So, oh, hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I think they are listening to in Malaysia. I came out to them on their trip to, you know, here to visit me for my graduation. And on the second last day of their stay, I came out to them one night, and my mom like had a whole, you know, 2 hours full of questions while my dad pretended to read the papers, but just eavesdropping all the way through. Yeah, and but it only took my mom like overnight to accept the whole thing, and probably took my dad, you know, a good 6 or 7 months of silence, and then he, you know, acknowledged it. But on the day that they left, which is like 2 days later, my dad said something very, very sweet, and for coming from my dad, it meant a lot to me. And he said, now that I know that you know, you will be able to look after yourself and you'll be happy, you know, I'm going to be happy too. So something very, very vague, yeah, like that, yeah. Yeah. But it was an acknowledgement.
What about your brother?
My brother, you know, I unfortunately, hi Peter, hi Pauline. I think if they're listening. we're not very close. I think we were a bit distant, you know, because of the geographical distance, and he's always been, you know, in a country different from mine, and so coming out to him, I think it was a bit indirect initially through my parents, but yeah, no, they're very accepting of us.
Okay, well, we'll come back to Greg and Kwong's story very soon.
Joy 94.9, and you're listening to Orange Ribbon today, and we're talking to Kwong and to Greg. So Kwong, we went down a bit of a French route that time, so tell us about that.
Yes, when I was working in London in 1999 for 5 months, I went across the English Channel to Paris quite a lot. And during one of those trips, I discovered Lara Fabian, a Quebecois, French-speaking. And I think she sings in English as well. So love her. She's a belter. I think there's a bit of belter in me as well.
Really?
In my fantasy. So just love her, yeah.
Yeah, again, it was a nice song. It had a bit of Celine Dion about it.
Oh, yes, yeah, yes. Yeah. Apparently, because of Celine's kind of hiatus, she got quite big worldwide, except for the US. She hasn't cracked that market yet.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about you two, because we've spoke to you individually.
Let's get the spotlight.
Let's get the spotlight. Now, you've been together for 14 years.
Yes.
So, but I read somewhere that you were forced to meet by a mutual friend.
We sort of were, yeah. At the time, we had a mutual friend who had, I think it took him about 12 months. It was, he did sort of introduce the idea of each other to us, and but we just hadn't met, and, you know, Kwong wasn't, he'll tell you why, but I was, you know, trying to find a husband and looking around the wrong people, I suppose. So it was quite a while before we actually agreed to meet. And I was thinking, oh, I don't really want to meet a lawyer. You know, I'll spend the rest of my life arguing. And, and I thought that he had said that he didn't want to meet a musician, but I'm not sure whether that's 100%.
His name is Joe, and he might be listening. Hi, Joe. Hi, Peter. Joe. Yes.
So how did you meet?
Well, eventually the coast was clear, so I actually got on my little push bike and rode around to Kwong's flat. And the great story I like telling about that is arriving on the at the door and ringing the doorbell, and he opened the door, and I thought, oh, it's got to be the flatmate. It's got to be some hideous thing inside there that's waiting to meet me. But there was no one else in the flat. It was just his gorgeous self.
Now, 14 years together, mm-hmm. but you don't live together.
No, we've never lived together. The only time we're living together is when we go away on holidays, and surprisingly, that all works really, really nicely. Yeah.
So why have you never actually got together and you're living arrangements?
A couple of things. One, I had two dogs. Kwong had two cats. I up early in the morning, go to bed early. Kwong's up a bit later, stays up until 2 o'clock in the morning. I guess they're just a lot of things in terms of how we live our lives that are very, very different. And I think we both think that it just never would have worked if we had been under the same roof. It may eventually, 20, 30 years from now, who knows? Yeah.
The only practical steps that we've taken, we move very close together. I think we used to be about 15 minutes away. Now we're only 4 or 5 minutes away.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So it's kind of like in the neighborhood. I think we were looking for two houses in the same street for a while. And it was very hard to, in houses in Melbourne are usually sold by auction. Mm. So it's not really within your control to buy two places in the same street. So when he bought where he is now, I tried, but that area became sort of out of my league. So when I bought, I bought in the next suburb.
Right.
So it's not too bad.
We got a message from Sean.
Oh, hi, Sean.
Now, he's asking you both a question.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this is optional. You do not have to answer this question. But Sean wants to know how old you are.
Oh, I'm quite happy to tell him that.
Yeah. I'm 44.
Right, and I'm 53.
Okay, so there you are, Sean. He thinks that the story will be better if we know the age.
Put into perspective their experiences as they moved to Melbourne.
There you go.
Well, he should have worked it out from my talking about, the 60s and the 70s.
And he also says that Lara Fabian is awesome.
Oh, yeah, so. Great. I'm glad he liked it.
There you go. Somebody else likes it.
Yes.
So just getting back to the two of you. So you live separately. So what's it like when you go on holiday together and you're sort of forced to live in a hotel room together or something like
that? It's great, actually. Yeah. It just works really, really nicely. It's the only pity is we don't do more of it.
Okay.
I think it would have been okay if we didn't, we don't work. Yeah. Because for me, I'm quite self-centered when I have to work. When I come home, I just wanted to do my thing at the time that I wanted to do them, instead of being kind of restricted because there's another person that you need to... Mm. So it worked for us because of that.
And we're both very spoiled. We've both got really huge houses. They're both full. And, we have our own studio each in our own house. We have our own gym in our own house. We've got... it's a very, very luxurious thing, yeah.
Sounds good to me. And if it works, then do it. Now, Greg, you're the musician.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about your work as a musician.
I suppose I started playing professionally, if you could call it that, at least for getting money from other people, when I was about 16. So a good 30 years or more of playing in different bands and then working as a piano bar entertainer. My last sort of big gig, I suppose, was on board the Spirit of Tasmania for 4 years and sailing in the seas. And
how was that?
It was very interesting. I was amazed at how many international people actually travel on that thing, but it was also interesting because you could be on such an angle in the water and sometimes you'd be splashing up and down so much in the sea that the piano would be rattling so much I wouldn't have a clue where to put my fingers. And I always used to play the theme from Titanic for my very last song every night. And I just say to people, look, just something for you to hum as you go to bed.
Did you ever get seasick?
Only once when I saw a whole family of people throw up in front of me.
Okay. Because I'm not a sailor at all.
Right. Yeah.
And did they throw up because of your music? Or
I hope not. I've never thought about that. You've just ruined my life.
And are you musical, Kwong?
I love singing. I learned the classical guitar for about 3 years. I can't read music very well, But I think I can say I'm musical
karaoke mega
karaoke
star.
Queen.
Now, just to take it a little step further, both of you are artists, so
yes,
you paint.
We do indeed. Yes.
Yeah.
I started painting because of a disease in my hands, which stopped me from playing piano and music. So I had to do something else. And Kwong had dabbled in painting on and off for quite a while. And when he got back into it a bit more and we started visiting lots of galleries, I'd always just thought, look, I could never paint or draw or anything. But under his encouragement, I gave it a go. And here we are now, about nearly 4 years later, and with our first exhibition
coming up.
Coming up.
How did you get into painting, Kwong?
I've always painted, I think. In primary school, I had a subject which is art, and my mum would coach me. That was more watercolor, and then later on, here I was experimenting with oil and acrylics and all that. And I just find it quite meditative outside of work to paint.
Right.
But really, I started painting in a big way about 10 years ago, just at home.
And what sort of style of painting?
Figurative and realistic. So a lot of people, painting a lot of people. But I'm getting into a darker direction more and more.
Really? Yes, yes.
My stuff's getting a little bit more out there, and it's a little bit more fantastic, I suppose. Yeah, but still figurative works. But yeah. I like putting people with not a lot of clothing on in a lot of very strange situations.
Do you copy each other a little bit? Or?
I don't think so. I think our styles, like as I say, I started off under Kwong's guidance, but it was very soon started to try, and you've got to find your own way and your own. I look at his things and think, oh, I wish I could paint like that. Other times I look at something I've done and think, oh, well, that's not bad either, So you've just got to find your own way.
So how much time, Kwong, would you spend on a painting?
When I was working part-time 4 days, I would spend like a whole day painting. And apart from all the domestic chores that we all have to do, weekends, I would paint into the wee hour of the morning.
A bit of Scottish there, Kwong.
Oh, yes.
A little wee.
Well, I have been to Scotland.
Okay. And what about you, Greg?
Basically every day. So I was made redundant during last year, which is another hour's show to talk about. But, I've only been working part-time for the last 4 or 5 years because that's all I've had to do. And, so basically every day I'm painting for a little while.
Okay, we'll come back to Kwong and Greg's story very soon. On Driven on Joy 94.9, and we are talking to Greg and Kwong, and we were talking about art and the type of paintings that you do. And what's the push behind you to stand there all day just doing a painting?
Oh,
that's the last one. The hard one's
that's in. A very hard question.
Yeah. It is meditative when you're doing it. It's even when I was involved in music, the thing I loved about it, and the same with art, is that it's just never ending. There's always going to be something to learn. There's always something to discover. There's always, some technical problem to overcome, and there's the joy of something when it's finished. It's just fantastic.
And how about choosing your subject or the style of that particular painting?
We haven't been able to afford to pay for models, and we've encouraged a few friends to pose, but we have been, working off photographs quite a bit at the moment. Yeah.
So how easy is it to get people to sit there?
I've got a thing on Facebook where I say, bring me your face. And, I've got a few responses to that, But basically, it is difficult. I think people expect we want them to get all their gear off. And while that's a great thing sometimes, it doesn't have to be.
Doesn't have to be all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Right. Now, you've got an exhibition coming up for midsummer.
Yes.
Now, what can we expect to see? What type of paintings are you going to exhibit?
It's all male imagery, both of our works. We called the show Painted and Pushed because if he hadn't painted, I wouldn't have. And if I hadn't pushed, he wouldn't have had a show. it's basically just all male image.
Okay. Artwork. How did you decide how many of each paintings did
wall,
you...
Wall space.
Well, how big the gallery was. How did you decide how many you were doing and Kwong was doing?
We've got equal amount of wall space. Fill it up any way you like.
We've actually structured it as two separate solo shows together in the same spot. And my works are quite autobiographical.
Okay.
It's 90% me. So it's me.
Now, how can people find out about Midsummer and your exhibition?
I think the best place is the website. The Midsummer website has all our details under Painted and Pushed.
Okay.
And we have a website with all the paintings on www.greggwilson.com.au.
Okay, well, I hope it's successful for you.
Thank you very much.
And thank you very much for coming on the show today.
It's our pleasure. Thank you.
After all these years, Kwong, you're back on Orange Ribbon.
Yes, it's like I'm coming home.
Well, that is Orange Ribbon for another week. Thanks to Kwong and Greg for coming in to the studio to talk to us. Don't forget to check out their Midsummer exhibition. I'm sure it will be great. I'm sure I am going to be. Thanks to Jess and Heath on program support this afternoon. Coming up next on Joy is Sha Power Show. So stay tuned for another great show from Shannon. First, we've got the beautiful Helen, who's going to be reading the news. She's giving me a little smile now. On Driven, we'll be back again the same time, 4 o'clock next Saturday afternoon, with more insights into our GLBTIQ community here in Australia and, of course, around the world. I'll just quickly mention, on the 28th of this month, we do have the 500th On Driven show. We'll be on air for 2 hours, bringing you little snippets of past interviews, and we're actually going to have live singing in the studio, which I think is a first for On Driven. But as I said, Helen's waiting here to read the news. So have a great week. And from Mark and myself, bye-bye.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.